Students attending colleges and universities these days may refer to all their classroom teachers as professor, but the term would be applied inaccurately in a lot of cases. Many classes in all kinds of higher education settings are not taught by full professors, but associates or assistants or even adjunct faculty, people who are not attached to the school full time. This is just one of the things pointed out in a new book called Campus Confidential: How College Works or Doesn't for Professors, Parents, and Students. Jacques Berlinerblau is the author. He's a professor at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University, where he runs the Center for Jewish Civilization. His last book was How to Be Secular. Jacques has appeared on NPR and TV talking about his work, and we're proud to have him here on the Jefferson Exchange. Hello, Professor.
Hi, Jeffrey. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. So you are a full professor. Those are rare breed even at Georgetown?
Full professors?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, compared to the general amount of professors, put it this way, there are 1.5 million professors in the United States, and roughly more than two-thirds of them are not even on the tenure line. So just think of it that way. So it's at least 70% to 80%. So I guess we're in the top 10% or 5%, so I'm honored and humbled.
Well, there is no shortage of people who hold doctorates, you point out, so why so many adjunct faculty?
It's a really interesting and complicated question. What's happened is the institution of tenure, which was pretty robust and healthy in the 70s, seems to be imploding. There's a downward spiral across the past 4 or 5 decades. And Jeffrey, some prognostications indicate that it's just not going to exist in 20 years. So we're not going to have assistant, associate, or full professors anymore. We'll all be underpaid adjuncts.
Huh. And what drives this then? I mean, why? I mean, so obviously a decline in the number of full professorships and tenure track faculty, period.
Exactly. So it's more, to be more precise, right? It's the decline in tenure line positions across the country. What's driving it? There are a lot of factors. The economic factors is colleges and universities seem very keen on driving teaching costs down to their absolute lowest levels. I think that's really where we have to begin. We professors can take a lot of the blame, and in the book, I blame us for a lot of inanities. But ultimately, these college and university administrations really aren't devoting the proper resources to teaching, and that's important because it affects American undergraduates.
Now, you say this is not about the collapse of higher education. You say higher education is doing fine. In what respect is it doing fine?
Well, STEM is booming. Business schools are robust. Admissions are basically where they need to be. I mean, we have more than 4,500 post-secondary institutions in the United States. We only lose a dozen or so every year. So higher education is really in a good way, and it's got a bright future. The question is, what about the professorate within?
All right, so then that is the issue then, is that the people who are doing the teaching are... So if tenure is imploding, then... I'm just trying to wrap my head around this as we talk, but does this mean that people no longer going to go through things like master's and PhD programs because there's no real incentive for them to do so other than to be smart in the subject?
Yeah, masters are always kind of cool. I mean, a master's program, to me, I talk about this in the book, is sort of a bright, shiny, happy experience. It can't be that tragic, right? It takes 2 or 3 years. You're in there with young people. You know, everyone is accelerating into a brighter future. It's the doctoral experience that I find to be singularly disturbing, right? Because that usually takes about 10 years. It's a massive investment of time and emotion and money, and it doesn't necessarily lead to the proper type of well-paying job. So that's where the issues are going to have to be resolved, that we're training all these people for jobs that actually don't exist. And we've been doing this now for 2-3 decades. I mean, we've known that the market is imploding. So the impact upon scholars and students is quasi-catastrophic.
Let's come back to the people themselves who occupy these positions, because you devote a whole chapter to what you call fuddy-duddy. So is the fiction about professors true?
Yeah, that's it. We're all fuddy-duddies, all right? Whether we are tenure track or adjunct, contingent faculty, each and every one of us, to a man and to a woman, is a fuddy-duddy. And what I mean by a fuddy-duddy is it's a product that is created by that doctoral experience, right? No one can go through that experience and emerge emotionally intact. And my second hypothesis is no one can go through that experience and really emerge as a competent classroom teacher, because it strains out all the qualities that are necessary for effective pedagogy.
Wait, so you're saying that what makes you good at being an expert in your subject also at the same time makes you lousy at translating that to other students?
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't be the first person to say it. It's been noticed for decades. So the skills that are necessary to be a good researcher, to bury yourself in the archive, to learn all sorts of obscure languages, to read endlessly, to shunt aside everyone in your family, those aren't things that conduce to being a great classroom instructor.
So is this remedied perhaps with just some more intensive teacher training or I don't know, visits to a therapist while they're in their PhD program or some combination thereof?
I think the therapy, insofar as there's a mental health crisis in American higher ed, Berkeley did a study that something like 50% of doctoral students in the humanities, more actually, are clinically depressed. So therapy would be good, but perhaps on our end, training doctoral students to think more about undergraduates, maybe a little less specialization and immersion, in their area of expertise, and more of a focus on how they would convey their expertise, that would be an arch idea. I mean, I'd love to see that put into play.
One of the things that comes up here is, I'm trying to figure out chicken and egg here. I mean, so it sounds like some tenure track professors are allergic to undergraduate students from the way you describe it. I mean, is it because they've been so immersed in their subject matter they're just not really good people anymore?
Yeah, I think it strains. I think we have to look at the process. It strains in many ways the humanity out of a person. I mean, getting a doctorate is such an ice. I did it twice, I actually did this thing twice in my life. I received two doctorates, so I should be certifiably insane by this point. And the process did drive me a little bit crazy, but I'm recovering. I'm in a 12-step program. So the way we train these doctorates is so kind of oblivious to the teaching requirements we have that it's a real big problem.
How do you think you emerged unscathed, or did you not?
I think for the first 20 years of my career, I was not unscathed, and then something happened. I don't know quite what it was, an epiphany, and I started realizing there were these other things out there called human beings, and I could have some type of positive impact upon them. So I had an epiphany, basically.
All right, more to talk about with Jacques Berliner-Blau. His book is Campus Confidential, How College Works or Doesn't for Professors, Parents, and Students. We'll come back and talk more about what he's written about. Join us on The Exchange by phone or by email. We'll be back on The Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Jacques Berliner-Blau, a professor at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University, and yes, a full professor, a tenure-track professor, which he says are becoming a rarer breed as time goes on. He thinks tenure might be gone in 20 years at the college level. One of the points he makes in his book, Campus Confidential, How College Works or Doesn't for Professors, Parents, and Students. You can join our conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3777. 760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I wonder how your fellow professors take to your opinions about them being perhaps very well-versed in their subjects, but not very good at imparting that knowledge to students.
Well, I've never been the most popular guy in the room, so I've grown very comfortable with that. What's interesting, though, is in the book I talk about what I refer to somewhat facetiously as my people. And my people are those 10 to 25% of professors in the United States that actually do care about teaching. So I'm not saying these people don't exist. They're there. They're on a minority on every campus in the country. And the response from them has been very positive. So that's made me feel good about myself.
Is there sort of a response from the people who are not terribly interested in teaching undergraduates, as you put? I mean, are they getting along the lines of like, hey, come on, you know, we need to be able to have some time for our research. I just wonder what the defense is, I guess.
The defense is, you know, shut your yapper, don't divulge tribal secrets, and it's better this way, because really what our job, our task in life is to produce research. I don't necessarily disagree with that in STEM disciplines, right, where you're moving towards something. Greater knowledge of the world that might help people. But the humanities, it's a little different. Humanities learning is kind of cyclical. It's not as if we learn things when we read literature that make the world a better place or have instant application. So I'm a little skeptical about the degree to which the research obsession per- pervaded the humanities and interpretive social sciences. I think that was a huge mistake.
So the soft sciences are where this is the bigger problem you're seeing.
Yeah, cultural anthropology, cultural sociology, theoretical sociology. I'm not quite sure folks like that in the social sciences need to approach the world the way a developmental economist would, right? Or a molecular biologist. I think we have to understand that we do something a little bit different. It's more interpretive than geared towards finding timeless, eternal truths that help the species.
All right, so we're not talking about discoveries in a laboratory under a microscope, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Okay. I have total respect for that sort of research, and I don't wish to put the kibosh on that, though science teaching is a thing as well, and I'm sure you have many scientists in your audience that are nodding their head and not nodding their head and saying, no, it's really important that we teach undergraduates properly how to become good scientists.
All right, help us on it. You mentioned tribes, and I understand these two tribes, contingent and non-contingent faculty.
Right. Okay, so this is a little bit complicated. I'll try to make this as easy as I can for your listeners. And one thing I notice in the book is nobody really understands who we are professionally. That's one of the funniest things about being a professor is people have no conception of the rather rigid hierarchies that prevail amongst us. Right. So what I try to do in the book is break it down. So let's start this way. There's something called the institution of tenure. And what happens when you get tenure is after a 6 or 5 or 7 year probationary period, you are guaranteed a job basically for life. All right? The tenure institution was put in place in 1940, and it was considered one of the shining accomplishments of American higher education. So from the moment you get a tenure track job and you've got your 5 or 6 years to strut your stuff, you're considered to be a tenure line faculty member. Do you have part one, Jeffrey? Is that clear?
I do, yes.
All right, so let's get to part two, contingent. All right, the problem is that most American scholars never even get to ride the tenure track. They end up as something known as contingent faculty, which means that they're not there for 6 years. There is no probationary period. They have no lifetime appointment, and they're basically hired year to year. They work under very, very poor circumstances generally. They have no job security. What's also very important is they don't have much in the way of academic freedom, right? I'm bulletproof as a full professor. I can basically say anything and live to tell about it because I'm protected by this august institution of tenure. That's not the case for a contingent faculty member.
So is there then limited possibility? First of all, I mean, are they getting full-time pay benefits, that sort of thing?
No. Many of them are living at the poverty line, right? That's what's so – sorry, I got so excited over
that. No,
them,
no, right? that's a good excitement.
Trust me, this is really the scandal of our vocation, right, that we treat good scholars this way, and it's so widespread. There are 70 to 80% of our workforce – is contingent. Now, some of them, I agree, like it. Maybe 10% of that 70 or 80%, it's a lifestyle choice. They've got another gig. They're independently wealthy. There's just so much teaching they wish to do. But I assure you, if you poll them, the vast overwhelming majority of contingent faculty are very, very disappointed with the way they're treated and the way their careers ended up. And I'm sympathetic to them because for about 7 years of my career, I lived that life as well. That's where I came to understand what it's all about.
Jacques Berliner-Blau is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Campus Confidential, How College Works or Doesn't for Professors, Parents, and Students. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. You might have some questions of your own about who's teaching students at higher education these days. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And so it seems like then if you're not full-time, you're not getting full benefits, et cetera, you're really never on a track that could even get you to a place where you could get full-time.
Precisely. And you're living on 1 year, 2 year, 3 year contracts. You have no freedom. You endure the condescension of other fuddy-duddies, as I call them. And gosh, can we be condescending when we want to. So it really is not a very pleasant or fulfilling life, I would say, professionally.
Well, if 70-80% of the teaching is done by contingent faculty, then the adjunct people, then they should have some strength in numbers, don't they?
They absolutely should. There are efforts to unionize them across the country. Some are successful, some aren't. But for the most part, I would say that effort to really give these people their proper rights has fallen short majorly over the last couple of decades.
So would you say that there's a magic number, a percentage of contingent faculty that is desirable, or certainly desirable if a student is considering going to a certain college or university?
That's where things get really interesting, right? Because the data is all over the place on what is better for an undergraduate student. Let me put it this way. If you're going to a top 100, top 50 school, and you're paying $250,000 in tuition, which is roughly what you're going to pay per student across those 4 years, right? I really think you deserve better than what you're getting, which means what you're getting is 70 to 80% of your undergraduate contact hours are with these contingent faculty. I'm not saying they're poor teachers, right? The data is really complicated as we try to understand who makes for a better classroom teacher. I actually think the contingent do it better. I'm just thinking of it from a consumer perspective, is that the college, usually the elite college, is not putting its most valued personnel in front of American undergraduates. And to me, that is absolutely mystifying. That is a scandal.
But then what is the benefit, I guess? I mean, if they possess all this knowledge, but as you have charged here, that they're that the more they are steeped in their subject of the humanities, often the lousier they are at imparting this to the next generation of people, is it better not to have them in front of students much?
Well, they're basic. Another chapter I have in the book is on standardlessness, and I talk about how there's so few jobs nowadays that what separates a tenure-track professor from a contingent faculty member is often nugatory. There's no difference. They've done exactly the same thing. It's just one got lucky and got the job and the other didn't. That's a result of our completely twisted job market, which is completely askew. So it's not necessarily the case, and this is really must be bewildering to your listeners. It's not necessarily the case that the tenure track professor has published more as a researcher than the contingent professor. This is one of the great abnormalities of our field, right? So it's like a campus novel, which is why I wrote this book as a sort of quasi-fictional campus novel.
Yeah, Campus Confidential, right?
You know?
So you're saying that even the adjunct faculty are still doing the publisher perish thing themselves, even though they're not in the tenure track?
They usually do it for about the first 10 years, and then I think at a certain point they give up, but many of them don't, right? And they continue publishing because they love their fields and they're very good at what they do. So we hear these cases all the time. We hear cases of adjunct faculty who have outpublished tenure line faculty, right? Often full professors are being outpublished by an adjunct who's roughly maybe 10, 20 years younger than she or he is. So these types of remarkable inconsistencies are what happens when a market is completely skewed and distorted. And the academic job market is in complete crisis. So you get these types of freakish occurrences, and they're not just freakish. They happen a lot.
Let's take a call here. We have Tom in Jackson County on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Jacques Berliner-Blau, the author of Campus Confidential. Hi, Tom.
Had a question about the nature of students in general. I was in school in the mid-80s, and I had a tenured professor tell me that if he had one student like me in every class that he'd teach till he died, that he was, and that was in the 80s, and he was really put out with people sleeping in class and nobody paying attention.
All right, Tom, thank you, and kudos to you for being, you know, that that shining star, resplendent student that we all have. I see it a little bit differently. I think the job is this. If you're going to be an American professor and you want the privilege of teaching on the college and university level, your job is educating 18 to 24-year-olds, and I have very little patience for professors who are constantly carping about their students. Ah, they're lazy, they text too much, they sex too much, they drink too much. I just really feel that's the job, right? If you don't want to do it, right, you shouldn't be in this line of work. And thinking of professoring as something that is inextricably bound with the education of that age group, I feel this would be a great thing for more American professors to be trained and inculcated in that logic.
Well, and so, I mean, basically they're dealing with what people between the ages of 18 and 24 do and should be expected to deal with that.
You were that age once, Jeffrey. You know the way we were, right?
I don't want to talk about the lawns I decorated at party nights, that kind of thing, yeah. Let's talk about research, though, because it's, you know, it's a great thing on its face that you want to make sure that the people who are on the tenure track and possess the greatest knowledge are spending time with undergraduate students. But what does this do to their research? Does it make it more difficult for them to get their research done?
Probably, but I'm a big fan of what we might call research-teaching balance. You've heard the expression work-life balance. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm actually a better scholar by not publishing as much as I might be able to publish. So I publish a little more selectively. That kind of slows me down and cools me out and makes me really write things that I feel are important. So I feel that by pulling back a little bit, which I've started doing, and thinking of myself as 50% an instructor and 50% a researcher, I'm cross-fertilizing both of those areas. I'm becoming a better instructor and a better researcher.
But are you in this position because you are a tenure-track
Absolutely.
Guy and a full professor? So you Absolutely. Can afford to pull back because you're not trying to publish or perish.
Exactly. I completely concur with you. I just wish more American academicians would have this privilege that I presently have. I'm completely right on the same page with you there, Jeff.
Let's take another call. We have Chris in Yreka, California on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jacques Berliner Blau. His book is Campus Confidential.
Hi. I just had a couple comments. One, that I had some amazing teachers at the junior college that I attended, some of them PhDs, but truly most of them were pretty passionate about the job of teaching, and it was real close contact with the professors. And my second comment is that once I got to the university, different people, but some of my professors looked at their role and job as basically kind of a gatekeeper and a weed eater to, you know, you fight to get through the door or whatever, and, you know, a lot of people don't, and they were just perfectly fine with that. So those are my comments.
All right. Thanks for that, Chris. Appreciate it. Thoughts from you, Jacques?
Yeah, I think what Chris is recounting, I hear a lot that on the junior college and community college level, there is much greater satisfaction with what is happening in the classroom and the kind of product that these schools are putting in front of students. I taught community college for about 3 years, and I do, in retrospect, recognize how much more focused we were. We were incentivized to focus on the quality of what we were doing in the class and the outcomes for students. And the higher up the ladder I went to 4-year colleges, more prestigious colleges, the less and less that theme was stressed. It was more about producing research, which would accrue to my glory and the glory of the institution. So I think his insight is sound.
We haven't talked at all about the effect of technology on learning, and I wonder how that might be a factor in all of this, because we're talking about passive learning where somebody lectures and the class listens and takes notes and all that sort of thing. We're in a world where information can be imparted much faster. Often through mechanical means, and you got MOOCs, you know, the massive online open courses. Does that factor at all into what you're talking about here?
Yeah, it does. I mean, the tech sector has looked at American higher education, and dollar signs have gone off in their eyes. They understand this can be monetized, and it can be monetized far more efficiently than how we're presently doing it. So technology is at once, for American professors, a huge advantage. I might explain that in a moment, all the things it brings to the classroom. But it's also kind of terrifying, right, because many people are thinking of completely disrupting the 4-year college experience and just putting it up all online, or having professors teach through online courses and getting rid of tenure completely. So it is at once a huge opportunity for us, the fact that this technology exists, but it's also terrifying because it threatens to completely pulverize our way of life.
Which brings up a parallel, I noticed, with the media industry, which, like the newspaper folks, who basically saw their revenue disappear overnight when Craigslist took away the classified ads. What have colleges failed to notice about what's going on in the world around them, and how might they adapt?
You know, I would also add taxi drivers. So journalists, taxi drivers, and professors, right, are like three industries that were absolutely upended, right, by tech. How have colleges started to act? It's like every man for himself out there, right? Every man and woman for himself or herself. I mean, everyone is trying something new. There was this infatuation with MOOCs, right? The massive online open enrollment courses. I don't think that quite turned out as well as it should have. Let me put it this way, right? So let me issue a challenge, right? If we as professors can't deliver a better education in our format of teaching, which is in a classroom face-to-face with students, if we can't do that better than something devised by some venture capitalists and some tech bros, then we deserve to perish. Right? That's my view. Right? And I'm kind of itching for this fight. I want somebody to stage a competition in which you take 30 students and you subject them to two different possible learning environments. One is a good version of the traditional model, which is what I'm trying to advocate in my book, and the other is just put it online, right? Just put it up online and have people learn, you know, whenever they want, and they don't have to show up. If we lose that, if the learning outcomes are shown to be better on the side of the tech bros, then we absolutely don't even deserve our perch as educators. So I'd kind of like to see a teach-off or something like that, if such a thing can be imagined.
You want to see the machines go against the professors?
Yes, I want to see the machines and big capital go against a group of committed classroom pedagogues. I know this sounds like a fictional premise and it could be pretty funny, but I'd like to try it just to see what happens.
Wow, you've given us a lot to think about in this book and a lot to read about as well. I love some of the names you bestow, like Precious New England Liberal Arts Boutique College versus Big Bland State University. You had some fun here, didn't you?
I certainly did. It was fun to write.
The book is called Campus Confidential, How College Works or Doesn't for Professors, Parents, and Students. Jacques Berliner Blau is a professor at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University and the director of the Center for Jewish Civilization there. Professor, thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey. That was a lot of fun.
Good to have you.